Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine.
Plus global business, finance, and tech news.
The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
Well, set your alarms, everyone, because tomorrow we will get Warren Buffett's always closely watched annual letter to shareholders, along with Berkshire's full year 2022 results. This is coming about 11 days after we got news that Buffett had slashed his holding of TSM. We're talking about Taiwan's semiconductor manufacturing just months after disclosing a major stake, an unusually quick reversal by the legendary stock picker who tends to buy and hold in a big way.
Yeah, and also just Berkshire is such a beloved, like, we love to watch it. We love to analyze this
Absolutely.
Letter. So we're going to break it down with Bloomberg News regional banks and insurance reporter Max Reyes. He's here with us in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. Max, thank you so much for joining us to talk about this. First of all, just give us the breakdown on why we know and love this annual letter so much.
Sure. I mean, I think there are a lot of executives who do these, but Warren Buffett really sort of set the template. He set the mold when it comes to doing them. Buffett is known for talking about any number of things. Very often it returns to his love for and his major bets on the U.S. economy. But, you know, literally anything could come up. The one thing I would say is that he's become a bit more reserved in terms of what he talks about, but I'm still expecting to see some surprises tomorrow. You never know. Last year, for the first time, he gave some space to Greg Abel, who's sort of the heir apparent there. So I'm just curious to see what he has in store for us.
Okay, real quickly on that succession plan, do you anticipate any more of that coming up in the letter coming out tomorrow?
I really don't want to jinx it.
but that's what you're hoping for?
I don't think we'll hear more about what Buffett is planning to do. I think Buffett will, you know, he's there for the long term, right? But what we have been hearing, what we have been wondering about, is whether or not there might be plans around declaring or noting Joe Brandon, who runs Allegheny, the insurer they bought last year, whether or not that might make it clear that he's ready or primed to take over the insurance business, right? Mm-hmm. Currently, Ajit Jain runs that, but it's unclear how long he'll be there, how long he'll stay, and whether or not there are thoughts about making a sort of clear indication as to who's going to be in that role next.
But we know really who the successor is, right?
For Buffett?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Greg. That's okay. Greg Abel.
And so we think Jane will ultimately leave because those two were in the running for a while.
Sort of, yeah. So right now they're both vice chairmen. Essentially, Jane runs all of the insurance.
Right.
Greg Abel runs everything else, essentially, non-insurance, as they call it.
But insurance has been a big business for Berkshire.
It's sort of the business in that it is what allowed Berkshire to be Berkshire, right? Mm-hmm. They use the cash that the insurance businesses generate to do all of the deals and all of the stock picks that we love to talk about.
Right. So, but having said that, are we expecting at some point, Jane, because...
As he gets older, you know, as the company evolves, and kind of going back to what we were saying about Taiwan Semi, right? That's another sign of how Berkshire is changing, not just in terms of the leadership, but in how the stock decisions are being made, what stocks they're picking, how long they are in them, when they rotate out. That kind of comes down to very often Buffett's deputies, you know, Todd Combs and then mm-hmm. Ted Weschler. Mm-hmm. So I think what we're seeing is Berkshire slowly but surely moving towards this era where a lot of the folks at the top who have been there basically forever eventually are not.
How are your sources reading the swift change on TSMC? Is it as big of a deal as it seems?
It's a big question mark. A lot of folks who I spoke to say that they think it's indicative of a bet that bet was made by Todd or Ted, because again, Buffett is known for really sticking around. There are some exceptions to that. He did something that looks kind of similar on Oracle. The real thing that makes this difficult to sort out is the fact that unless Buffett talks about it either in the letter or the annual meeting, we just won't know who made the call. He's gone out of his way on some occasions to spell out, this is my chunk of the portfolio, this is someone else's, but it's not always clear. So that's the thing that we also have to sort of wonder about.
Well, and it's interesting because for such a long time, right, Berkshire was really kind of your old line companies, right? We know it was jewelry, it was chocolate, it was trains, it was like things that, you know, felt like the old time economy, if you will. And then when it made the Apple investment a few years ago, we realized, okay, things were a little bit different, right?
Yeah.
And the younger generation, if you will, at Berkshire was certainly making its mark.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, right, Buffett and Berkshire are kind of infamous for how late that they woke up to the sort of value of tech. But we are definitely seeing changes there. There's any kind of number of metaphors about how a ship is slow to turn or that sort of thing, but we are seeing a turn. We're seeing these changes coming about.
I do wonder in terms of bigger, broader macro, like if you think about it, I still remember during the financial crisis when I want to say, I can't remember, was it who Buffett was on with? Was it Jamie Dimon on 60 Minutes? And I remember working in like the dark depths, but who basically went on and like provided some comfort for everyone, you know, in terms of talking about the U.S. economy, it's going to exist, and my faith in America and those kinds of things. And we've seen him in times of stress certainly come out and lend his support. We're at this interesting juncture of trying to figure out what post-pandemic life is like, right? And we talk a lot about the Fed and high inflation. Is it safe to assume that he will address some of these in terms of high inflation, some of the big macro stories that are out there?
I wish I could say yes, and we'll definitely see that.
I know, we hope so.
Yeah, again, it's the kind of thing where...
But he tends to touch on these
exactly.
kinds of things.
So our assumption is that he'll talk the macro picture, he'll walk us through what he sees there, what he thinks there, but I don't want to commit to any promises that I won't be able to keep come tomorrow morning when we see what the case actually is.
Well, another story I love in the Buffett space is, I think it was LeBron James, he gave him the investment advice to play basketball, right? Like, just be good at what you're good at. Put your money in an index fund.
So you mean if it wasn't for Warren, we wouldn't have LeBron James?
I mean, it's possible that he's responsible for LeBron, right? I can't believe I'm talking about sports. This is so out of character. But is that investment advice of just like stick to a traditional index fund still the mainstay of Warren Buffett and Berkshire, or do you think it is starting to modernize a bit?
I think this is maybe not a super helpful answer, but what you're saying about sports there, Buffett and people in his circle have always stuck to this sort of stick to what you're good at ideology. There's actually, Charlie Munger once said something along the lines of, you know, Buffett just keeps his head down and focuses on what he needs to do to make the company run well and lets the other stuff fall to the side. The same reason Buffett's good at his job, it's the same reason that Roger Federer is good at tennis, right? Mm. It's that idea that if you're focusing on what makes sense to you and what you know well, and you just knock that out, right, that's the best thing you can do. So if those strategies have been working for you, they make sense. I feel like Berkshire thinks that its strategies have been making sense. It's that kind of thing.
So his strategy is not shifting then. This isn't like a new era.
I would say that Buffett's doing his own thing. His deputies are doing what they're doing, that sort of thing.
Yeah, he definitely has his, he does his thing for sure. Shares of Berkshire, I'm just looking at them. Class A shares, they're just down about 1% so far here in 2023. They were up about 4% last year. We're going to get full year results. What are you watching out for in that regard?
Well, so I also cover the insurance world pretty closely. So I'm kind of an insurance nerd. I'm really curious about what we see with Geico.
Yeah.
Overall, the results for auto insurers across the board have been really difficult because inflation has squeezed margins, squeezed out the profitability. And what people really want to see is a better sense of what Berkshire is doing to combat that, whether that's rate hikes, whether that's cutting back on advertising, that sort of thing. We've gotten a lot of granularity.
Which they advertise so much, as we
exactly.
all know and love,
yeah.
the
yeah.
little gecko.
The gecko, all that. So we've gotten a lot of granularity and visibility into that from other insurers. I'm keen to see what, if anything, Berkshire has to say about that and how results compare to the sort of difficult period we've seen the last few years.
Is there one particular data point or word choice that's going to be really critical for you that you're really on the lookout for on that?
It's funny you say
no
that.
No pressure
just,
here.
Just because I control F, it's just like Succession, Buffett, Abel.
Yeah.
But on underwriting specifically, it's just whether or not, you know, how the bottom line looks, how underwriting profitability is shaping up. Just those factors are going to be what determines kind of the trajectory at Geico.
Just 20 seconds. Which of his businesses are doing the best right now? Because he's got energy, he's got railroad, he's got manufacturing, he's got a lot.
Obviously, the bets on energy have really been paying off. The railroad is a consistent performer, right? And that's what he looks for. He looks for utilities, the sorts of things that will bring in the cash in the long term consistently.
What we really want to know, Max, is what time do you have to get up in the morning to like read this? What time does it release? What time does
8 a.m. Eastern.
Sorry.
Tough Friday night for you.
Get your coffee ready.
I'll live.
We'll be looking forward to it because it's certainly a must read. Max, that was a great comprehensive background and breakdown, if you will. Max Reyes, he's regional banks and insurance reporter here at Bloomberg News, joining us in our Interactive Brokers studio.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live to our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
All right, speaking of pain, we know the strong dollar has created a lot of pain across global markets. We talk a lot about the dollar, its impact on earnings, on emerging markets, and so much more. This is the U.S. currency has been on a global rampage since the Fed started hiking interest rates. Now some of the world's biggest investors are saying, Maddie, we talked about this, that the U.S. dollar's reign is finally over. So now we have to figure out what this ultimately means and what this means for global markets.
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. And we've got an amazing voice on our program to talk about this. It's among our most read on the Bloomberg. It's today's big take. Here to discuss is Liz McCormick, chief correspondent for Global Macro Markets, joining us from Zoom here in NYC. Liz, thank you for being here with us. Tell us about just the status of the dollar. Give us the big context here.
Yeah, so my colleague Ruth Carson, like you said, had a great big take today that, you know, there's a lot of investors, and of course today was a crazy day, right? This hot data you've been talking about, and yields went up and the dollar went up, but all that noise said, you know, that investors are really, a lot of them, leaning into that really, you know, huge high we saw last year in the dollar is just the peak, you know, that things have gotten more in line, other central banks are tightening as fast as the Fed, that maybe we've seen the worst of it, and like Carol said, that it's been a lot of pain for a lot of folks, the strong dollar. So maybe, you know, noise aside, the worst of the dollar strength is over. That's the theme that people feel.
Liz, how much of this is just what's going on with the Fed and the expectations that, okay, we know the Fed's on its, you know, fight against inflation, we're going to see some more higher rates, it's going to go on for a little while, but ultimately we're starting to see the end of the Fed's rate hiking cycle. How much of that is impacting the dollar at this point?
Well, I think that's a lot of it, right? Like we said, when there's some noise and hot data, it moves around. But, you know, I was talking to a fund manager yesterday, Carol, and kind of asked him the same exact thing. And he said, yeah, a lot of it is that the Fed's maybe closer to done. But then he was leaning, and we're not seeing that yet, into that, you know, the Fed's closer to done. And all this tightening, which, as we know, has a lagged effect, he sees a recession coming, be it at the end of this year, early 2024, and that the U.S. is going to weaken sharply, and that's going to be bad for the dollar, right? So I think it's the global macro outlook. And, you know, things globally have gotten a little better than they were, right? You know, Europe has done a good job at replacing Russian energy sources, right? And so that was better. China has reopened faster than some thought. So kind of things are helping the other currencies, as of course the dollar is always against a pair, right? Mm-hmm. And then the factors we're talking about with the Fed and maybe a U.S. recession coming faster is kind of taking the dollar down.
Well, we just got this paper from investors saying that we should go up to potentially a 6.5% terminal rate. I have to wonder, and I'd love for you to help me understand this, Liz, if we're going to get a higher terminal rate, why does that not mean a stronger greenback? How have we already reached the peak then? And what are you and the people you speak with thinking about that?
Well, Maddie, that's like the million-dollar question. People yeah. saying, where's the terminal rate, right? So I saw that paper. It was great. They're saying 6.5. We've had some people on TV and on the radio saying it could be higher. But there's a lot of people saying, listen, the Fed's probably, you know, going to get to 5.25, 5.5, and maybe just stay there for a long time. So I think the jury's out from economists, investors, of actually really how high does the Fed have to go? Like, I think... In fact, Ruth had it in her story, one investor we talked to that said, listen, I don't think the Fed's got to get to 6%. Those were his exact words. I'm forgetting his name right now. But that some people think that 5.5, I mean, think about where we were about a year ago at zero, right? 5.5, they've done a lot of tightening. So I think that's why they stepped down from 50 to 25. And of course, had gone from 75 to 50, that I don't know. That's the big question, that maybe the Fed doesn't have to get to 6 or 7. And if they get to 5.5 and stay there for a year, that may not be enough to keep the dollar stronger relative to its global peers.
You know, Liz, I think the person you're talking about is Eric Stein, Chief Investment Officer of Fixed Income at Morgan Stanley Investment Management, who said the Fed says they're going to get inflation to 2%. But in reality, I'd say they get more to a level of like 3%. I don't think that they will continue to push rates to 6% just because of that. You know, can I ask you something? You understand these markets and the Fed really, really well and investor sentiment. Does the Fed, can they come back now and say, yeah, we got it wrong. It's not going to be 2%. Like, can they, how do they do that? How do they unwind? Yeah. And, or does it really matter? Can they continue to stick to 2% even though markets maybe see something ultimately a little bit differently?
Well, you know, I don't think, and you know, we have Mike McKee on, who's our expert.
Yeah,
on
we
the
talked
Fed.
About
and, you know,
this.
Yes, I don't think that they want to come out and say that, especially now where they're really talking. We had one of the Fed officials today talking about we have much more credibility. So I think if they decide to God, I say, well, we're at 3%. That's pretty good. I think for now they're going to keep talking that, you know, we're still on course to eventually get to 2%. Like I think it was Romaine in your previous yeah. segment was saying, eventually we get to 2%. But I don't think they want to lose that credibility. So maybe at some point, we know a lot of people have said that. I think Mohamed Alarian has talked about that going for 2% is just not the right number. But like you said, they've got to be very careful because so much about the Fed winning on inflation is credibility, the market believing they'll do what they say. So, I mean, that might be a big rethink, but I suspect they want to get through this year before they even kind of flick at that they're thinking about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I just have to wonder, too, about the Fed's ability to achieve that goal with the tools that they have. I mean, we would all love for inflation to come down, Liz, but can the Fed do that with the tools that they currently have at their disposal?
Well, it's funny that one thing, you know, an investor said to me, and I always love when they bring something up because they're supposed to be smarter than me, and they are, but I'm not asking them
about. I don't know if they are, Liz.
Yeah, well, at least they say, well, Liz, by the way, and one guy said to me, an investor, listen, Liz, you know, rate hikes are one thing, but I'm really worried about the quantitative tightening, which we've kind of forgotten about, which is the Fed rolling off its balance sheet, which is at full speed now. And, you know, what if that does continue on for another year or so, like the Fed would like? There's some saying if the Fed, of course, has to eventually cut, they'll stop that. But so you do have these two tools going. The rate tool is the most blunt. Chair Powell's made that very clear. But they also are like pretty quickly trying to bring that balance sheet down. So there is a lot of tightening in the system. And like you said, none of us feel too good. My vegetables are still more expensive than ever. But eventually they should get there, we hope, to bring down inflation.
Hey, Liz, when you look at the trade, especially in the Treasury trade over the last couple of weeks, it does feel like investors have gotten religion to some extent in terms of what the Fed officials and FOMC members have been saying. So what do you think our audience has to kind of note when it comes to that Treasury trade? I mean, right now I'm looking at a two-year note. It's off its highs of the day, but we're still at 4.8. What is it that they need to understand about the action that we've seen over the last week or so?
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up because we were looking, because like you said, this month has been brutal for bonds, right? The yield just took off. Remember how January was also the everything rally, rallied, including bonds. And I remember one investment manager saying to me, it was like January 25th. Well, if we could stop the year now, I've had a great year, you know. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way, right? But so I think, you know, remember all the street analysts called this the year of the bond, right? You know, things are better, yields are better. So I don't think we want to write that off yet. This was a brutal beating this month. Rates are very high, like you said. But what if it does prove the Fed gets to 5.25, 5.5 and stops, inflation starts to come down? You know, 6 months' time, things could be looking better. So I don't think a lot of people who are bullish on bonds are willing to give up. They're kind of like willing to basically take the pain for a while. That may not be true if this keeps up for another 3-6 months. But for now, I think the bullish bond people are saying, okay, yeah, I'm not doing so great now, but I do think it'll be better. I'm making some decent income. I don't think Fed's going to 6%. You know, they're in that camp, you know, so we'll see.
Really quickly here, Liz, the thing that I would love for you to help me be smarter on is the Fed updating its basic model of understanding. In like 30 seconds, can you tell me, do you think that update was enough? Do they understand our current economy?
Well, that's another million-dollar question. Let's talk about their update on what they think the neutral rate is, kind of that standard base rate where they're not adding stimulus or removing it. And they haven't updated that yet, and a lot of people think it's higher now. So the Fed's long-run rate is like a 2.5. People in the market think, like you're saying, it's a different world now. That might be higher. So that could be a game changer. So there are some questioning some of the Fed's models. You know, the jury's out on who's right or if they adjust, but it's an open question.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and certainly for the Fed to have to kind of figure out. Liz McCormick, you always figure out so much for us here. So appreciative. Liz McCormick, she's chief correspondent for Global Macro Markets at Bloomberg News, joining us via Zoom in New York City. Yeah, I think she's probably smarter than a bunch of people.
I think she's smarter than a lot of people she probably interviews.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Check out her stories on the Bloomberg Terminal. You can find them at Bloomberg.com. You can also check her out on Twitter at McCormick Liz. All right, you are listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week. Carol Masser along with Maddie Mills, and this is Bloomberg Radio.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live to our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
BofA came out with a report last month.
They did, and it was about our favorite topic here, Carol Masser, digital currencies. We thought maybe with Sam it'd be going away, but it is not. Some might say it's hard to imagine this report from Bank of America saying that central bank digital currencies, otherwise known as CBDCs, along with stablecoins, are the future of money and payments. But alas, here we are.
Especially after, you know, the carnage that we've seen, right, especially in the latter half of 2022, it's interesting to see that report. So let's get to it. We have a good guest in our weekly look at the world of cryptocurrencies. Joining us once again, delighted to have him back, Tony Saliba. He's founder and CEO of Liquid Mercury. They work with Coinbase, Kraken, CME Group, and more. And he joins us via Zoom from Chicago. Tony, good to have you back here on Bloomberg Business Week. Do me a favor, just set the stage, remind our audience about what you all do at Liquid Mercury.
Hi, Carol. Thank you.
Yeah.
Liquid Mercury delivers institutional technology for traditional finance, Wall Street, if you will, and for crypto natives to trade all range of digital currencies. We have a product that we're partnered with Gemini with for individuals. So we're a fintech company that focuses on everything digital currencies, digital assets.
So it's the actual platform, technology, advice, or all of the above?
just technology. And the platform is technology. We do training and options because we're options people, and crypto options are coming to the U.S., but most of our clients doing crypto options are non-U.S.
Okay.
But no advice, really, just fast, best execution.
Okay. So I can tell by your background that you're doing great, but Tony, I have to bring up some of the scary aspects of crypto from this year. We've got Gemini, you mentioned, you got fintech, some scary words there. Where are you at right now with crypto?
Well, so one of the things I've learned, I've been in the crypto space for about 6 years. And one of the things I've learned is that after 40 years in traditional finance, cycles are much faster in crypto. And the scam bankman fraud, as I like to refer to it, announcement of November.
And to be fair, that's your opinion. They're still exploring it and investigating
it. That's all just my opinion.
To be fair. Yeah.
Right. But clearly there was some problems. And that caused a lot of issues that rippled throughout the industry. Prices collapsed in a lot of respects. And most of them have rebounded at least 50% off of the lows. For our business and businesses like ours, there's been a little bit of delay in terms of closing deals and onboarding and things, but nobody said, that's it, I'm walking away. In fact, topic, as you mentioned, the CDBCs are definitely top of mind of everybody because they're moving forward. The bank, you know, Bank of Japan just announced night before last that they're moving forward with theirs. So, yes, it is. As much as I hate to say that the central bank digital currencies is the cash of the future, it's pretty much a fact.
Okay, but why do you hate to say that? Because it's really interesting because CBDCs, I, if I'm correct, they would still be pegged to the dollar, right? Is that why you're not a fan?
Well, no, I'm cautious because it's coming from the government and from central banks. Where,
right, that's not very crypto worldy.
Yeah, and it's the issue of privacy, right? So right now, people know that they can put money in a vault or in their mattress if they so want to, if they're afraid of other things. And that really won't be the case so much with the central bank digital currencies. And I'm just giving the worst case scenario, right? They'll be able to track your purchases. It could get political. It could get social where.
But they already do. They already do, right? It's just like, you know, electronic money in a bank account, using cards, smartphone, you know, right? I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. But this will become much more absolute. Right now, forever, you know, we've all known we can't take more than $10,000 out of the country without letting the feds know about that. That number has been the same for 50 years. Clearly, that is an infringement on some levels of your privacy, of your own freedoms. But with the CBDCs, it becomes more absolute. They could turn you off, you know, your buying power off, should you violate some heretofore unknown set of rules that they may come up with. It's just another link. Now, having said that, I think companies like ours will come up with solutions that'll try to help break that chain and allow you to have a little bit more freedom. That's the only ominous aspect of this, ladies. I think generally it is going to make currency much more efficient. I think it'll become more ubiquitous. People will learn how to use these sort of apps much faster, but
Because isn't that kind of, Tony, the whole point? Like, it would make it maybe more efficient, right? Cut out the intermediaries, and bummer for them, right, in terms of their industry. I'm not making a call here or anything. But, I mean, the point is efficiency and transparency and clarity, and would also mean that, you know, no funny agents, right, can do something. Like, it would be much more clear, hopefully. Like it just takes the existing system up several notches. Right. We are already in a digital world.
We started with the only possible worst case scenario, but you're absolutely right. This makes it much more efficient. I think regional banks,
like, things could be settled faster, right? Like, think about that. Maybe more cheaply. Like, there are benefits.
Totally. Anybody try to do a wire transfer lately? The charges are really outrageous. It takes 3 days or whatever. So, you know, this is definitely a positive. We, like I said, we landed on the one square on the board that maybe private citizens should be concerned about. And you work backwards from there, and everything, I think, is much more positive, much more modern, much more efficient, and definitely cost effective.
Does potential regulation from Washington change that calculation for you at all?
Well, it does, in that they dictate to the central bank. So it'll be, you know, their rules that, you know, we adhere to. I think we're all kind of waiting for more guidance in the U.S. on crypto in general, which would be very helpful, so we could, you know, sort of lay out the white lines on the playing field and know where everybody's safe, rather than deal with, you know, regulation by enforcement, which is what's happening. Oh, you stepped over the line, taking you down, versus, oh, you're fine because we've defined the rules. I think those are coming, hopefully this year, actually.
So net, Tony, good idea, bad idea? You've laid out nicely the pros and cons, and we've had this discussion, I feel like. So people are getting kind of both sides here. Is there a net takeaway for you in terms of—
Good idea. Net, good idea. Net, I'm an optimistic person, and I'm hoping that the, you know, positives will far outweigh the one, you know, cell on the board playing a surface that we don't want to land on is sort of shuffled into the background. But, you know, there are definitely some privacy concerns we all have to be aware of. Now, having said that, as long as people, your audience for sure is enlightened, know those pitfalls, we go in with eyes wide open and try to embrace the new technology and make the most of it.
Is it good for the crypto diehards? Like, does Bank of America give them, you know, yay credibility, or is it, oh, that's institutional?
No, I think it does. I think it's good for it. Apparatus like ours is going to be used for both. So that definitely puts a floor under that for the players that are in there today. Purists will say, oh, it's too centralized, but you don't have to play. You can take your money out of the bank, buy ETH or Bitcoin or some other popular token to utilize and trade with and be sort of outside of the orbit in that regard. But generally, I think it's going to be enlightening for everybody.
All right, going to leave it there. Hey, Tony, have a good weekend. Thanks. Tony Saliba, he's Chief Executive Officer, founder of Liquid Mercury, which, as we said, works with Kraken, CME Group, and more, joining us via Zoom from Chicago.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes. 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts Gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live to our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is The Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, just got about 16 and a half minutes left in today's trading session, getting ready to wrap up what's been a holiday-shortened trading week. Remember, we had a long weekend, so just Tuesday through Friday. Carol Masser along with Madison Mills. And Maddie, we're looking at an equity market that has definitely been bouncing around. We're off our highs and lows of the session. And this is once again a day where we've seen yields move up, and this is once again on a hot inflation print.
Another red-hot inflation print this morning in that PCE. It's interesting. I loved this data point that Abigail had earlier today. She was showing kind of some of the sell-offs that we've seen over the past week from Bank of America. She showed us, I think, $9 billion in U.S. stocks, and then even $4 billion sold off in the U.S. dollar, all going into the bond market. So that really feels like the big focus right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we love to do, is watch where the money flows. And specifically, when investors are a little nervous, worried about even higher rates for longer, and this has certainly been what the message has been from the Federal Reserve and Fed members. Mike McKee talking about him. He's at an event here in New York, and we're continuing to hear where they are saying inflation needs to get under control. We're sticking to that 2% target. Then as a result, rates, we're going to continue to see the markets at this point still pricing in quarter point moves for the next three meetings. No doubt about that. They've been really kind of getting rid of that thought and market expectations that we could see rate cuts this year. That's moving into 2024. And so as a result, you know, you've got investors thinking, okay, what can I yield, or what kind of yields are we getting in the treasury trade versus what we see on the equity side of things, where there's some risks in terms of corporate profit growth, in terms of pressures on margins. So that's why you continue to see, or increasingly are seeing, investors move into the treasury trade.
Yeah. And I love Tom McKee put it really well in one of his commentaries on surveillance this morning. He was saying, you know, what's the lesson from the bond market, from treasuries for equities? And I feel like that's the big question right now. I know we made this joke all the time about, is the bond market smart and equities are dumb? It feels also, though, like there's not a lot to predict right now because so much is moving around. Even, it was so interesting, the Macro Man column from this morning, he basically, the headline was like, soft landing equals no landing.
Well, this is the tricky part. And it's funny, as we talk about with our TV colleagues in our simulcast, this whole idea of, you know, targets by the Fed. And, you know, I've said it a million times, and I mean it, because the Fed will tell you too, this is not an exact science, and they can set out projections and targets. They have, you know, repeatedly said, we are data dependent. When we go into any Fed FOMC meeting, we are going to look at all of the data points up to that point and make a decision. And that's ultimately what we see. Having said that, we talk to a lot of investment professionals that are making investment decisions on a daily basis for their clients. And one of them is our next guest, our Drive to the Close guest. He's Charlie Massimo. He is back with us, Senior VP and Financial Advisor at Wealth Enhancement Group. They specialize in planning for families impacted by autism, so they do have to think about those long-term investment needs. He is joining us on the phone from Washington, D.C. Charlie, good to have you back on Bloomberg Business Week with myself and Maddie Mills. Tell us about this environment. Is it making it more difficult for you to figure out how to place bets? Are you increasingly moving money into shorter term investments and cash to kind of ride it out?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me back, Carl. I think for many consumers and investors, this is a very difficult time, but it's a necessary time. I think no matter what has to be done, we need to get inflation under control. And you're talking about data. The data just seems to be somewhat inaccurate and changing all the time. But to answer your question, you know, absolutely. You know, a couple of years ago, 4% bonds, you know, for 10 to 20 years looked pretty enticing. enticing, but now when you have a one-year Treasury bill paying over 5%, it makes absolute sense to cut your losses on the long term, bring them down into the short, and try to eliminate as much risk as you can, especially for those people that are in or nearing retirement.
Right. You get that yield and you get liquidity at the same time.
Yeah, you're just taking risk off the table, and I think for most people, they just have to take as much risk off the table without making major changes to their overall allocations.
Can I ask you a question, Charlie? I was just mentioning that our macro man had a column this morning saying that a soft landing is actually just a delay of an inevitable hard landing. Can you give me your perspective on that?
Well, you know, I think that's fairly accurate. I think a lot of the talk you're starting to hear now is that they want to get more aggressive with raising rates instead of this 25 basis points at a time. Because what you're finding, and until you can change consumer behavior, you're really not going to bring down inflation. And what I mean by that, people aren't really feeling a lot of pain yet. People are still, you know, buying homes with a 5 to 6% mortgage. They're still buying cars. They're still taking luxury trips. But when mortgage rates go to 8%, when borrowing for a car goes to 12 or 13%, that's when consumer behavior is going to change, and that's when we're going to start bringing down inflation. So a soft landing may be very difficult because, again, I think we're at a point where we're going to have to get much more aggressive in raising rates.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the data points. New home sales surged to a one-year high. A lot of it was, you know, buying in the South, but that was a pretty strong number. And when we talked with our Mike McKee earlier, you know, you had income up, you had spending up, and you also had personal savings up, which is really interesting. And sentiment is up. So you've got that along with those inflationary. It's interesting to see individuals kind of holding up. Charlie, thank you so much. Have a good and safe weekend. Charlie Moss. He's Senior VP and Financial Advisor at Wealth Enhancement Group, joining us on the phone from Washington, D.C.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live each weekday starting at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.